There are two elements that are very important. One is that he didn't kill himself, and the other is that he has his own and stresses his own belief system of being in war and is very much identified with that. So we first analyze the circumstance that he didn't kill himself. Then there are two opportunities for interpretation. One is that it is a kind of psychosis, which means there is a severe psychiatric disorder. So these people are, from a psychiatric point of view, are convinced of the things they are doing. We call that psychotic. But the way of planning degree and this cool-blooded manner he committed the crime is a strong argument against this hypothesis. So what I would say is, when we analyze this this crime pattern and what he told later, then there is much incidence that there is not a severe psychiatric disorder, but there are these things what we call prognostic syndromes. There's this readiness for violence, and probably there are some personality traits also.
The lawyer of Anders Behring Breivik, he claims that he's insane. The chief of police says he's not. Neither of those two is a psychologist. I mean, is he insane?
I don't believe so. Of course, the lawyer will have a certain function, and of course he tries to claim that. But there's strong evidence that there's no base for being not responsible for the crime, because there's this long planning period, there's this very detailed behavior, there's this cold-blooded behavior and everything, and this is a strong indication that you have very sane psychic functions from perception, from decision-making and all that, and that's a strong evidence against the relevant psychiatric insanity.
It wasn't a spontaneous crime. He didn't get stressed and snap. It was
right,
a long preparation.
Right. That means that you are functioning on a high psychic level, because you have to perceive what is going on. You have to make decisions. You have to calculate what are situations. So there's a lot of high psychic functioning, and this is strong evidence against severe insanity.
More generally, how can someone kill so many people? How can a human who didn't have a history of violence do something like this? What conditions have to exist?
Yeah, normally you find a history of violence, because there are strong personality patterns and personality traits, and if they are strong, they will lead to behavior. But if you take a look at this history of this guy, then of course you find correlates of that crime. There is this this manifest, this theory. So there, over years, there is a preparation of this crime, and so of course we can't say there's nothing in behavior. We see there are strong correlations in what he's doing, what he has doing the last years. But you're right. Normally, you find violent behavior, and not only violent theories.
And they say that the upbringing, that sort of the formative years of a person when they're young and growing up, that plays a role, doesn't it? I mean, I read that Breivik's, his parents divorced when he was one.
Yeah.
Maybe he was bullied. But a lot of people's parents divorce, and quite a lot of people are bullied. But not everyone becomes a psychopath if he is a psychopath.
That's a myth. If you look at the scientific research, then you find that maybe in one third of violent and sex offenders, you find those difficult circumstances in childhood. But as you mentioned already, you find a lot of people with the same circumstances that don't commit offenses. So that's not really a causal explanation for that. And on the other hand, we find in two-thirds of this population, we don't find any childhood, special childhood circumstances. So The myth is that people think 99% of all violent sex offenders, they had a broken home and a difficult childhood. And that's not true. Of course, it's influenced by the circumstances you grow up. But then the main topic are those personality traits. And if difficult childhood, if that would be a factor for severe crimes, then of course you every day would see such a mass murder.
Well, this is the disturbing thought that maybe, I mean, we all have the hunting instinct. We've all evolved from hunters. Are we all potential killers? I mean,
No.
It doesn't take much to push us over the edge.
And that's wrong. That's the second myth.
Okay.
And I'm glad you're asking that. It makes a huge, huge difference whether your probability to kill somebody is, let me say, 90%, or whether it's 1 per 1 million. And that all depends on your personality traits you have. If you have personality traits that are associated with violence, and there are some of these we know, and these are those prognostic syndromes. Those are personality traits. If you have that in your personality, you have a high probability of committing crimes. If you don't have that, then it needs very, very seldom, very rare situational circumstances that you commit a crime, and that makes a huge, huge difference. So to say everybody is a potential murderer is...
It's not true. Is killing a large number of people, how does that differ from just killing one person, you know?
Yeah, it differs. It always has a kind of relational aspect. So the mass murders, they choose certain persons, certain targets, and they have a relational aspect in killing those people. They always have a longer planning before committing the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, these are special personalities. I've seen some of these persons, and everybody had very special personality traits. These are not normal people.
Do people who commit crimes like this, do they have to psych themselves up? Do they have to prepare themselves mentally before they act? Apparently, Breivik, he was listening to music from Lord of the Rings, and he took drugs before he did it.
Yeah, some do so. Some try to get in a certain mood. But still, the problem and the base is the readiness they anyway have. And then maybe like compared with if you want to go out dancing in the night, then first you have the motivation to go out and maybe at home you before you go out you listen to music and drink alcohol. So this is accessorisch. This is the reason is the readiness, and some of them do say, other don't.
Unfortunately, Breivik, he's not the first person to go on a deadly shooting rampage. In Britain, there have been Thomas Hamilton and Dunblane, Michael Ryan. There's Columbine, Virginia Tech, 32. Finland and Germany have both seen a couple of shootings in the past 10 years. The one big pattern, it seems, is young men. Why is it always young men?
Yeah, young men are, even historically, regarding to violence, are a problematic subgroup of society. We know that you know this theory of Heinzson, who analyzed wars in history, and he said a very important factor is that in populations you find a certain percentage of young men. And young men are very ready to engage in fighting, to engage in some radical theories. So that's true for a greater subpopulation of young men. But of course, there are differences. Not everybody who is in his as a young man who is ready to maybe follow a an extreme theory is ready to use violence. But the potential, if you look at society, young men are concerning to violence, are the problematic subgroup in society anyway. Yeah.
Warning signals. Can anything be done to prevent events like this? What can friends, family and colleagues look out for?
Of course, severe crimes always have a prehistory, always. So theoretically, you have warning signs before this crime. Theoretically, you can prevent those crimes if you see these warning signs and if you have the possibility to act. The practical question is, do you have the information? And the second question is, are there experts that are able to evaluate those information? So in practice, it's difficult if the guy has not committed violent crimes before. So then it's very problematic, like in that case.